You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well today. Hope you had a good weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. And I hope you had, when you did it in a safe manner. Yeah, it's really important to be safe. And in fact, if you didn't have to really do it, you stayed indoors and you washed your hands. Because this ain't no joke. This is no joke. Whew. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspective. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. When you're on the webpage, front page, click on podcast, and then you'll see at the top African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Other programming that we have here on Time for an Awakening Media. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and all times are going to give our Eastern time. So this evening, Monday, Acres of Diamonds Public Affairs Programming with Brother Wahad from 6 to 8. Followed by Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey. On Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10. And then on Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, oh, that's right, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Sunday at 7 p.m., it's time for an awakening once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Sunday coming up, I seen an email from Brother Professor Manua Pim, and just wrote a book. So I'm definitely promoting Brother Manua Pim, who will be on Sunday, Time for an Awakening at 7 p.m. Outstanding brother, a primary researcher, much in the same mode of Dr. Renuka Rashidi, Professor Manua Pim. I met him, whew, man, back in the early 90s. Very impressed with that brother, and he's done consistently good work since that time. In fact, he was the one who pointed out the fakery of some of the things that some of the artwork in ancient Kemet that were pawning off, like the Nefertiti bust and so forth, and that statue with the man and woman, although that is a concept of us, you know, with a complementarity sitting side by side, but it was not real. It was not Kemetic. It was not historic. So Brother Banu, Brother Manua Pim, on Sunday at 7 p.m. on Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The Warren Ballantyne Show, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. here on Time for an Awakening Media. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses, is WeBuyBlack.com. You can get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The products are made by us, and they're ever-expanding. Go to the website, WeBuyBlack.com. I like those boxer shorts, man. Those things are tight, you know, kente cloth patterns and everything like that. Yeah. AfricaForTheAfricans.org, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Brother Bomani Tahemba, the number to call, Brother Bomani, is 404-931-9429, 931-9429. And, of course, his tours for this year, which he had four of them, probably the first two, the one to Senegal and Gambia, April 3rd through the 13th, and the one to Ghana, May 25th to June 5th, will be rescheduled. I think it's the best term to use, rescheduled. But he also has the one upcoming in November, South Africa. Going to South Africa, November 20th to the 30th, $3,700. And then to Ghana once again in December, December 24th through January 5th. And that's $3,700. And then next year, April 2nd to the 12th, 2021, going to Senegal and Gambia. And that's $3,500. Give Brother Bomani a call or go online. Go online. He has everything you need to make your trip happen. The payment plan, the money down, $400 down, pay on it. Beautiful. But if you want to see photos of previous trips, go to facebook.com/Bomani. You want to see videos of previous trips, go to youtube.com/Bomani. Brother Bomani Tahemba. Habesha. Habesha. Incorporated.org. Go to HabeshaIncorporated.org. Habesha stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. Brothers and sisters, once again, they're doing the work. They're building the Kashi Village in Ghana. And once again, go to the website and help in that endeavor. It is a noble endeavor, and they're doing the work. They're doing the work, y'all. That's important. Some people talk about it. They are about it. They're doing the work. Shrine of the Black Madonna. The shrine, brothers and sisters, is closed. That's right. They are closed. I'm not sure if they're open the hour they usually are. You know, the class is not happening. You know, the COVID-19 virus has done a lot of things. And it will continue to do a number of things for the very near future. Let's hope that within a month or two away that it'll level off, and maybe a month or after that. I'm not saying back is business as usual, because I didn't like business as usual. You know, do I expect some fundamental change to happen? Doubt it. Very seriously. I'll talk about that in a minute. The Medu Bookstore, the Medu Natural Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall is still happening. And you can call Mama Nia 404-346-3263, 404-346-3263, the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall if you're in the Atlanta area. If you're in the Atlanta area and you want to go east on I-20, going towards Lithonia or going towards Augusta, Georgia, that is my good brother, Gazimdi Ajamu, Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. He has a coffee shop open within the bookstore, and of course he has books. He has T-shirts, and he has the red, black, and green Nagash shoes. He has a lot for you. And the brother's trying to stay open, which, of course, is very important. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa cooperative economics, as we like to say, family-centered economics. And the Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night at 9 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. The number to call is 929-477-2789, 929-477-2789. And it's just truly unfortunate that our conference was canceled that weekend. Once that was the beginning of the cancellations throughout the country of various events of, you know, as it was really starting to take hold, you know. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti and Sister Ya Baruti, once again doing an outstanding job of educating our young warriors, and they're doing it online as we speak. Akabin Institute, make your check and money order out to Akabin AKOBN Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. Akaban Institute, P.O. Box 10786, Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. If you want to use Cash App and PayPal, the dollar sign, YAAMBARUTI Baruti. So you can make that constant payment to Akaban Institute. Sanjay-IET.org. Please go online and check out what Sister Gabrielle really has done with Sanjay-IET. Sanjay, SONJAYITI.org. Sanjay-IET. She deserves to be supported, no doubt. Deserves to be supported. I believe they all do, you know. Unfortunately, it's not, I can do what I can do. And believe me, the things that I'm talking about, I support. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking about it, right? The Inye Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. The Inye Sesim. April 5th. Your philosophy determines your thought pattern. Your thought pattern determines your attitude. Your attitude determines your behavior pattern. And your behavior pattern determines your actions. I love that. I used to tell it to the students I used to work with back when I was in Milwaukee. It all begins with your philosophy. What you think that determines your thought pattern, what you think. And then your thought pattern determines your attitude. Because of what you think, you have an attitude about whatever that might be because of what you think. And that attitude will determine how you behave. And because how you behave, those are your actions. It begins with what you think and then your actions. Brother Anthony Browder. Everything is related in causal cycles. One thing causes or begets the next. We operate in a universe grounded in enigmatic change. That means each state of being builds on the state of being that came before it and lays the foundation for those states of being which are to follow. It is like steps which can only be climbed one at a time. Your fundamental interpretation of reality unconditionally dictates what you know or think you know or do. The only conditional factor in this chain of cause and effect is your fundamental interpretation of reality. If your true philosophy, how you imagine truth and reality is ideally, is compromised in any way whatsoever, then all links that lead to that final output, which is you, are compromised. In other words, what you believe is the meaning and essence of reality. What you conceive of has what you should be, your people's true vision. Therefore, your life's mission determines what you think in the first place. So you should think well, dear brothers and sisters. Think well. You know, I'm telling you right now, it's just the ancestors. Today, I'm talking about Bobby Wright. Today, he passed. Dr. Bobby Wright in 1982. I know you've heard me on this program speak about him a number of times if you listen to this program. And so here it is, the Inye Sesim. Man, the spirit of our ancestors. Affirm, I think from an African interpretation of reality. Affirm, I think in an African interpretation of reality. April 6th, the genius of Europeans is that they have a talent for draining diseases. They have always drained their political sores on the lands of other people. They have the talent of recovering their internal losses by external extraction from people who had nothing to do with the crimes committed against them. They just imposed themselves on others. My favorite, Dr. John Henry Clark. Credit must be given where credit is due. There is no one better at needlessly bringing chaos where there is peace and objecting their ills on others than Europeans. It is their way. They have been at war with each other ever since day one. They practice their aggressions within. So have they moved outward into humanity to steal a human status? They had to dress up their barbarities in the resources, ways, and intellect of others who had been naturally blessed with life-giving
creative genius. The people who they savagely overran are innocents, destroyed by childish avarice of a people without conscience. Avarice. They rose as we fail. They rose because we fail. We can never forget their assault was unprovoked. Never has an African people attacked a European people outside of the need to return order to their lives. That has been the case since we began and remains that way today. We are constantly under attack by them. The only thing that we want from Caucasians is to be left alone. Affirm, I will never forget what has been and is being done to African people. I will never forget. Affirm, I will never forget what has been and is being done to African people. The Inyosesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Brothers and sisters, I hope and pray that you are staying safe. You are washing your hands. You are doing everything that is necessary to keep yourself safe. You wear a mask or some kind of cloth over your face. There are a number of brothers and sisters who are making masks, ingenious ways of doing it. There are a number of brothers and sisters who are selling stuff that they have and really selling it for a lot more than what the hell is really worth. But I understand, you know, that some people want to make money. It's like the people who hoard, you know, they do some hoarding, you know, buy all the damn toilet paper. Let me say, I don't believe that human beings are naturally, intrinsically selfish and greedy. I believe human beings are shaped by an environment. So if you have an environment that is harsh, unyielding, unforgiving, scarcity, very cold, if you grow up in that kind of environment, your mindset will be survival of the fittest. Might makes right. Very aggressive, very sexist, very racist. When you grow up in that kind of environment. And so in your constant mindset, you are the manipulator. You are the underminer. You are the liar. You are the cheat. You are the thief. There are some societies that before Europeans came, very peaceful, coexisted with the planet, did not eat a lot of meat, ate a lot of veggies, vegetables, plants. Things were in a balance. The European has brought chaos to this world. Now, in further studying this situation that we're in, this crisis that we're in, and I know that a few weeks ago, and if you can remember, we ain't getting the coronavirus, man, because you know we melanated, and it ain't happening too much in Africa, and it's still not, and it will be, you know, it ain't happening too much in Africa, and so you know, the most people who are dying in the United States. The most people who are dying from COVID-19 virus are American Africans and mostly American African men. If you're over 65, that's a prime example, but there's still people are dying at a young age. There are people dying in their 30s and 40s and 50s. You don't have to be over 65, but one thing that would cause the death is you having a precondition. Are you diabetic? Are you asthmatic? All these other conditions that you have. I don't have a pulmonary disease, but I had one. I had pneumonia a number of times. So that makes me susceptible, you know. So I'm definitely advocating washing your hands, giving somebody a fist or elbow bump when you greet a good brother or sister that you know. You know, give them a, show them a little love on the elbow, you know, on the fist tip, you know. Wash your hands. Early data shows American Africans are contracting and dying of COVID-19 at an alarming rate. And they use Milwaukee. I told you the first two people to die in Milwaukee were two brothers that I knew. Two brothers that I knew. And now there's some people hanging on. And there's a third brother that died. I also knew him. And there's some brothers hanging on. As of Friday, American Africans make up almost half of Milwaukee County's 945 cases and 81% of its 27 deaths in Milwaukee County. And in Milwaukee County, the population is 26%. But in the city of Milwaukee, one thing about Milwaukee, it is hyper segregated. That was a term that was given to Milwaukee back in about 30 years ago. When they were studying from a Northwestern University professor, hyper segregated with defined lines of segregation. So in the city of Milwaukee, we're about 40 something percent. I say 45%. Let's use that one. In fact, when you add us Latinos and indigenous people, we're the majority of the city of Milwaukee. Milwaukee is one of the few places in the United States that is tracking the racial breakdown of people who have been infected by the virus, offering a glimpse of the disproportionate destruction it is inflicting on the American African communities worldwide. In Michigan, where the state's population is 14%, American Africans make up 35% of the cases and 40% of the deaths as of this past Friday. Detroit, where the majority of the residents are American African, has emerged as the hotbed with a high death toll. And, of course, New Orleans has not established case breakdown by culture, but 40% of the state's deaths have happened in New Orleans, where the majority of the residents are American African. Illinois and North Carolina are two of the other few published statistics on the COVID-19 cases by culture, and their data shows the disproportionate number of American Africans who were infected. It would be unimaginable pretty soon, said Dr. Cecilia Maxwell, an infectious disease physician and associate dean at Howard University of Medicine in D.C., a school and hospital in D.C. dedicated to the education and care of the American African community. And anything that comes around is going to be worse in our patients, period. Many of our patients have so many problems, but this is kind of like the nail in the coffin. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention here in Atlanta tracks virulent outbreaks and typically releases detailed data that includes information about age, culture, and location of the persons affected. For the coronavirus pandemic, the CDC has released location and age data, but it has not released the culture data. You notice I keep saying culture as opposed to race, because there is no damn race. There's no such thing as race. Caucasian created race. The CDC did not respond to ProPublica's request for culture data related to the coronavirus or answer questions about whether they were collecting it at all. Experts say that the nation's unwillingness to publicly track the virus by culture could obscure a critical underlying reality. Its quality likely that a disproportionate number of those who die of coronavirus will be American Africans. Reasons. There are the same reasons that many African Americans disproportionately have high rates of mental material death, low levels of access to medical care, and higher rates of asthma. Dr. Cameron Jones, a family physician, epidemiologist, and visiting fellow at Harvard University. COVID-19 is just unmasking the deep disinvestment in our communities, the historical injustices, and the impact of residential segregation, said Jones, who spent 13 years at the CDC focused on identifying, measuring, and addressing racial biases, cultural biases within the medical system. This is the time to name racism as the cause of all these things. The overrepresentation of people of color in poverty and Caucasian people in wealth is not just happenstance. It's because we are not valued. Of course we're not. That's why we should value ourselves. I don't give a damn if Caucasians don't value us. This system will never value us. So, dear brothers and sisters, boost your immune system. Now, I've seen some more stuff that are out on 5G. I'm quite sure you have as well. We'll talk about that at a later date. We'll get more in depth on the issues of 5G. A good friend of mine who's worked in, he said he don't believe it's 5G. He's worked in that field. And he said, no, Brother Oshie, I can't believe you biting us. I said, no, listen, man, I'm looking at every damn thing. I'm looking at everything. My good brother from across the pond, Paul, that sent me some outstanding stuff and of course, Paul was talking the other day about some of the things. So, I mean, it's real. But the reality is people are dying. And so what can we do to boost our immune system? What can we do to prevent? What can I do as somebody who has an underlying cause who fits the other profile? What can I do? And people who get it will die alone. You will not, your family will not be there to hold you, to say last goodbyes, or to console you, or to encourage you to get well, and to pray for you. You can pray for somebody anywhere, you know, if you believe it'll help. Sometimes miracles happen, you know. But please, boost your immune system. Boost your immune system. Vitamin D, sunlight. Get out in the sun. It's almost 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. The sun is high. Stay out there for at least 15, half an hour. Get some sun. Get those vitamins A, B, C. Load up on C. Vitamin D, of course, you can get in from the sun. Vitamin E, F, flavonoids. Flavonoids, and zinc, black seed oil. Black gives us strength. The brother from Jamaica, who was in New York working in the hospitals, felt it coming on. He probably put his head over the a pot of steaming water with turmeric, ginger, and garlic, and lemons, and orange rinds, and so forth. Inhale that, continue to inhale it, and, you know, or used a hair dryer with a spray water bottle to spray your face, and you blow that hot in because it kills coronavirus. Boost your immune system. Elderberry tonic. Sister gave me some elderberry tonic. Delicious. Boost your immune system. Brothers and sisters, like I said, there's a lot out there, and we'll deal with that. But right now, first and foremost, we have to protect ourselves. I just read you that the most people who are dying are us. When we said 3 weeks ago, maybe a month, I ain't worried about no coronavirus. I'm melanated. No, brothers and sisters, we are dying, as has always been the case. If the Caucasian has a cold, yes, right, we got pneumonia, and I've had pneumonia. And that's what this virus is. It's pneumonia. It gets into your nose, into your nasal cavities, into your trachea, your windpipe,
into your lungs and fills it up. When I tell you the brothers that died, they went to the hospital and 2 or 3 days later, they were dead. They died quickly. There has been some people, in fact, really, most of the people who get it survive. And I hope there's a woman who is 100 some years old survived. There is survival rate. But because of factors, diabetes, asthma, bronchitis, COPD, heart conditions, you smoke. These things, if you get the virus, will probably, I ain't saying exactly, but probably cause death. Let me get a couple of that callers in that call in. I'm going to, right after these calls, talk about Dr. Bobby Wright, who died on this day, 1982. 602.
Yes, Brother Oshie.
Hey, Brother Marcus. Good morning. How you doing there, brother?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
So, I've been, a news voice clip came out from a nurse, this Jamaican nurse that works in the hospital in New York. And she said, what's happening is that, you see, when they put those patients on the ventilator contribute to their death too, you know, because what happened is that the ventilator takes over the breathing of the person.
That's true.
So the person's lungs don't get to work. You see what I'm saying? So she's saying that it would be actually better if they sent these people home, because at least their chest, you know, they'll be able to breathe.
Right. I understand what you're saying. And, yes, but it's almost it's almost like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. So, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. So she was saying that's the one of the problem, because being that the lungs not working and that person sitting there, all that mucus and that pus and everything builds up in the lungs, and then they have to suction that stuff out.
Right.
So once you start to suction it out and you see blood in it, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
As they want to see blood in it, in the mucus, that means it's infected. See what I'm saying? So,
right.
But what I'm noticing in Oshi, is that on the continent, it's not spreading as rapidly as it's spreading here.
Right.
In our community.
Right.
So it is something, Machiavelli is behind what is going on, because all of a sudden, it just broke out like wildfire in our communities. See what I'm saying? And now we are the number one. We are now the face of corona, because they're going to use this to devastate us. So you are correct.
The Europeans have been devastated. Italy, France, Spain, devastated. And so
a lot of them elderly people they're killing over there. You know?
Right. But even young people, too.
Old folks.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, we try to pay you if they pay Social Security. We try to, you know, time to move aside. That's just like here, last week or so, they were saying, you know, the elderly should be willing to make a sacrifice and go ahead and die off so we can restart the economy.
Yeah, the lieutenant governor of Texas, I heard you say that. But who said that to? Hitler? Mussolini, some people said that too now.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So we are that dangerous. We are in a dangerous situation with these people here.
Oh, man. And then you heard the French doctor say we should test the virus vaccine on Africans.
Africans.
You know, we should go to Africa and test the virus vaccine. You know what? Let me say this, Marcus, because I'm sick and fucking tired of us not really understanding who we're dealing with. These motherfuckers are psychopaths. Oh, let me calm down. I apologize, Marcus. I apologize. And I'm about to read.
I'm telling you.
But I'm just saying, you know, we keep hoping and praying and wishing that somehow these folks who have no humanity and no regard for humanity would somehow get a damn epiphany and wake up and say, listen, It's not going to happen. But we think it's going to happen because we've been trained to believe it should happen.
It ain't going to happen.
This is menticide.
It ain't going to happen. They're dealing with a megalomaniac, a
kleptomaniac,
a homicidal maniac, a pathological liar. Ain't no way to deal with that. Ain't no reforming for that. So, you know, but you are correct.
Yeah.
We have to just brace ourselves, you know, and then you know what? Terrible brother Ocean down here, a lot of our people down here are obese.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. They're obese. The health problems that we have, the diabetes, the overall health problems that we have, smoking, asthma. Hey, you know, when I was on the fire department, one of the things I will never forget was watching that young man, a teenager, die from asthma, and there wasn't a damn thing that we could do. When we came on the scene, first as firefighters giving him O2, then when the paramedics came on the scene, giving him advanced breathing treatments and so forth, nothing we could do. And it's just like what's happening now. Ain't a damn thing. That some of the, that's why I kind of agree with you to some extent about the respirators. But they're helping to be because their lungs are filling up and they're trying to give them medications while they're doing it. But it's not happening. And the most people who are dying is us. I appreciate your call, Marcus. Continue to listen, brother.
All right, good brother.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. 447. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good morning. Good evening. Anybody listening on the international network, World Wide Web, Brother Ochi, let me just acknowledge the absolutely outstanding and wonderful work you do and the time you give up to sacrifice and pass the message on. And, you know, I'm absolutely grateful for yourself and your team, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard, and everybody else that contributes to this wonderful platform.
Thank you, my brother. I appreciate it. I really do, Brother. Brother Paul, I really do. And I once again, apologize to the listening audience for my outbursts of profanity, but I'm just sick and tired. Once again, the Europeans have no regard for human life and particularly for African life with just the audacity to say, oh, we should go test this vaccine out on Africans, you know, just like all the other things they have tested out on us. The syphilis test in Tuskegee, the many experiments when they used Sister Henrietta Lacks's cells to produce so many things and gave their family not a damn thing. I am tired, Paul. I'm tired of this, man. And I'm tired of us not understanding what we're dealing with. That's the frustrating part, because I love us, but I'm tired.
Brother Ochi, absolutely. You don't need to apologize to anybody. Absolutely, you do not. You see, the truth of the matter is, yeah, we have been in the dum-dum zone for too long. And if anybody's offended by you swearing, they should look in the mirror and be offended by their lack of action. Because, in you know, at some time, you've got to move from being under his stand to overstand what is actually taking place right in front of your face. Let me tell you this, Brother Ochi. If anybody takes the time to read and do their due diligence, most of what's happening today has been in plain sight. There has been a history of a psychopathic, megalomaniac attitude being perpetrated on people of color. Am I lying to you?
That's right. No, go ahead. You're right.
So what is wrong with us? What is absolutely wrong with us? It's, you know, let me just respectfully and humbly disagree slightly. It's not the problem we don't understand. I don't think that's the problem. It's that we make a choice. We make a choice to sleep with the devil. We make a choice to go along, to get along with the devil. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not that we don't understand. We've been going along.
Yeah.
In some lunatic, psychopathic infection, which he's infected us with, we've taken on board, and we don't want a remedy because we're comfortable, and we don't want to be removed from our comfort zone, yeah? And we lie to ourselves, and we lie to our family, and we lie to our people. That's what we've been doing.
Yeah.
We don't want to face up to the truth. Most time when you speak the truth to people, listen, Brother Ochi, you don't need to apologize to anybody. You've been sacrificed in your time, and you've been speaking the truth. I've been listening. from you came on here. I've been listening. I was listening before you came on here. So I appreciate the truth. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear the truth. I don't care how bad the truth feels. I want to hear the truth because I know the truth is the only thing what will set you free. Not wrapping yourself up in your imaginary illusions and delusions of grandeur. No, that's not. Listen, Brother Ochi, I've seen it. I've lived with our people, man. I've been places all around the world. I've seen how we act. The thing what disturbs me, you see the same pattern. That's what's very disturbing to me.
Yeah.
You know, I hear African-Americans, let me say again, I hear them talk about, you know, we're special people and all the rest. And I see people right here in England behave exactly the same as them. Exactly the same. And I think they're so different. They have this illusion of grandeur. I'm so special. Why are you so special? You're the same. Anywhere I go on the planet, I see you, you're the same. Same behavior, jealousy, backstabbing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you lie, sometimes you tell the truth, sometimes you want to sleep with his wife. Yeah, you do. Okay, that's what goes on. And we need to clean up our attitude from time, because we've been dealing with an adversary. Yeah, and he's not been playing. He's had a record of how he deals with us. So what is it that we don't know? What is it we don't see? We make the choice not to see. We make the choice to stay blind. That's what we've been doing, because we really and truly want a wage. We're job seekers. That's what we are. We seek his jobs, his work.
Yeah.
And he brings on his fiat currency. Yeah. And that's the problem. And now it's time to step up. You know, it's not too late.
Oh, no, brother, it's never too late. It's never too late for us to do what is right for us. But we have to develop the right mind. That's why I'm talking about Dr. Bobby Wright today, who coined the term menticide, a deliberate attempt to destroy our people's minds. That's the problem that we're dealing with, Paul. We are at war. And a lot of us don't understand that, and we don't want to see that. We are at war for the minds of our people. We don't think right. That's why when I read the Inye Sesem, those daily revolutionary thoughts, that was very pointed that we're talking about that, because that's one of those things that on that day we talked about, the mental aspect of how we think. Because of how we think is what we do. Our thinking has been influenced by a system and individuals within that system who have no regard for human life, have no regard for African life for damn sure, will do everything in its power. Just like somebody says, well, if they did plan this virus, a lot of Caucasians are dying. So they don't give a damn about other Caucasians dying. They don't care. That's always people that they feel are expendable. That's just fodder. They have an agenda. They want to depopulate this planet. They want to get rid of a whole bunch of people. And it's happening now. And it's been happening. And it will continue to happen to us until we wake up and divorce ourselves or get out from this evil, rotten system. This system of European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege that has been imposed upon the world. Until that happens. Go ahead, Paul. I'm going to let you say this and I'm going to take me a break. But
brother, the Baba Ochi, the last time I spoke on this platform, you gave me the privilege to speak on this platform.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm. And there was a caller who rang in. And I said that there's a saying, prevention is better than cure. And you had a caller ring in to ask the question, what do I mean by that? Or, you know, explain it. Well, if you look at the, if you break down the word prevention, pre means to plan beforehand. It means to take action before the event. That's what it means, prevent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you attempt to prevent something which is going to be executed against you, you have a plan.
Mm-hmm. Do we have a plan? You know? No. You know, ours is all in the hope and prayers and hopefully the benevolence of Europeans. We hope that somehow, some way, they'll look at us favorably and understand our suffering for what has happened to us over these years. It ain't gonna happen. We're gonna take a break. When we come back from that break, on the other side, we'll get into Dr. Bobby Wright, tribute to Dr. Bobby Wright. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Just a foolish dreamer, but I don't care, 'cause I know my happiness is waiting out there somewhere. I'm searching for that silver lining, horizons that I've never seen. Stars at night, I'd like to know the taste of honey in my life, in my life. Well, I've shed so many pains, and I've played so many games. And clear.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Dr. Bobby Eugene Wright was born in Hobson City, Alabama in 1934. Let me backtrack. I apologize. I did not mention this past Saturday was April 4th. Of course, is the day that Dr. King was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee, a day that many people will remember where they were when they heard about it, what they were doing, and so forth. It's another one of those days that it etches in your mind and your memory. And also, too, some years later, in 1972, April 4th, Reverend Adam Clayton Powell Jr. passed. So two very important people died on April 4th, just like today on this day, April 6th, Dr. Bobby Eugene Wright, once again born in Hobson City, Alabama, 1934, died in Chicago, April 6th today. On this day in 1982, one of the first things that happened in Milwaukee, when they built the Hyatt Regency Hotel and opened it, they had the Black Political Convention. I met Brother Ron Daniels, quite a few others, and the keynote speaker at the dinner was Dr. Bobby Wright. It was the first time I heard about him, first time I had met him, or heard him, rather. You know, remember, he gave the analogy talking about what menticide is when you're looking at the TV and the announcer. It's a basketball game. and it's the University of Notre Dame playing whoever, and the announcer says, then they get the rebound. Now here come the Irish. Here come the Irish. And you got five brothers, you know. Maybe a couple of them, their name might be O'Neill. McNeil. You know? Here come the Irish. Menticide. A deliberate, ultimate threat to our very survival. An attack on our minds. Dr. Bobby Wright was very instrumental. Let me play this one piece here. We're going to get off. Read a piece from a friend of Dr. Bobby Wright, and that is Brother Conrad Wuerl, who is a personal friend of mine. Dr. Conrad is in Chicago still doing the work, and we love him for it. This is Dr. Bobby Wright.
Who marry and cohabit with whites, yeah. Members of other races. All right? Now, I'm talking about we should immediately begin to boycott from this day on Diana Silverstein, who you all call Diana Ross, O.J. Simpson, Leslie Uggams, Bill Russell, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte, and we should really put on a type of probation. I haven't worked this one out yet. People such as Diane Carroll, Lena Horne, Red Fox, Sammy Davis Jr., and I'm saying to you, now you all might think it's a revolutionary. This is not. This is really not. It's just that it's got to be articulated. Now, y'all do with it what you want to. Four, this one's going to lose a lot of people. Okay. We should make a conscious effort to darken the race. We should begin to make a conscious effort to darken the race by accepting skin color as a criterion of adoption. We adopt children. Give that black child equal chance. Please. The black, you'd be surprised, you run these agencies, see all these little black kids, nobody wants. I'm not real black, no question on what they are. Nobody wants them. All right? Also, when you begin to look for a lover or a mate, look, don't reject the sister or the brother because they're dog. You know, in 1980, we got to be talking like this, but yeah, okay? Five, no black can be considered a leader or hold a leadership position who marries outside the race.
That's right.
No black. No black. Six, we must stop using blacks in negative terms. Black in negative terms. We got to stop doing that. Stop using that and don't. We must stop using the word nigger, Tom, and all that. You know, if you look at the image of Uncle Tom, it's an old black man with gray hair. The image of Aunt Jemima is an old black woman with a bandana on her head. Our grandmothers know. That's the image they gave us of Aunt Jemima. Now, we must begin, number seven, we must begin to consciously expose our children to positive black images, and those of us who are professionals must begin to spend some time in at least independent schools after school on Saturdays and Sundays with our black children. We must begin to show them positive images. Number eight, we also must have artists. We must begin to develop artists like this who have shown strong black images and things like that. One of the things that we're running into in terms of the religion, and I don't care what you say, you have to believe God is white. Every picture you've ever seen of God, he's white. Unless you've been at the Institute of the Black Madonna, down at the Black Madonna. And you probably think, I ain't gonna tell you what you think about that, but everybody think. I remember even in our church when the fans had Jesus' picture on him. So if you get, you know, subliminal suggestions, you know, you get one, and that white Jesus is flashing in front of your face, you know, it's cool. You get, I'm going to end by reading something to you, especially to you as black students, because I really love you very much. I really do. I love you very much. And I just have so much faith in you. I really do. I have so much faith in you because in you I see me. And the mere fact that, you know, that I don't think that we're any different than anyone else. I just think we'll rise above our problems. This is the poem, and they turned it into a song. And I want you to listen to it carefully. To be young, gifted, and black. Oh, what a lovely, precious dream. To be young, gifted, and black. Open your heart to what I mean. In the whole world, you know, there are a million boys and girls who are young, gifted, and black. And that's a fact. You are young, gifted, and black. We must begin to tell our young. There's a world waiting for you. You will end up where the world began. So when you're feeling real low, there's the truth you should know. To be young, gifted, and black, that's where it at. To be young, gifted, and black, oh, how I love to know the truth. There's a world without a fact. There's a world without a fact, and I'm hunted by my youth. But my joy of today is that we all will be proud to say, to be young, gifted, and black, and that's a fact. Alusha continue, Nashima Tachenda Bablishu. Sante Sana.
Of Bobby Wright, the man and his mission, is the question and answer session which followed Dr. Wright's presentation at the Black Psychology and Mental Health Conference at Atlanta Junior College, April 10th, 1980. The questions have been edited for clarity. However, Dr. Wright's answers are complete and unedited. Person coming from an all-black environment adjust to a predominantly white situation without losing his identity and compromising his principles? Also, give an example of how black people have been miseducated and trained not to appreciate themselves.
Okay, I think that the first thing you must differentiate between is between tactics and principles. I will compromise with you on tactics. If you say certain things about integration, I must go over here and work in this place because I can do something like that's black. I will not compromise on principles. I'm not talking about me, okay? And we have never made a distinction between principles and tactics. And that's why when we'll see a sister, say like Jenny, who's working over there with all those white folks and all, we'll say, see, she's not relevant because she decided to go over there and work for those white people and not realize the things she talked to you about here today. See, and that's why I don't get into Tom and all, but I don't know why Jenny's over there. And I don't know what she's doing. I might not want to know because if they find out she's talking to me, she's really in trouble. You know, I do want all of us to agree, at least, on the principles on which we exist. That's your first thing. The second thing you raise is the essential question. Most of our children, you see, that is where the mental side came in. They took away our history. Most people believe they are from Atlanta. But people in Chicago believe they're from Chicago. Let me give you an example, then, just one. One example. You get five kids into a room. Italian, Jew, Polish, Irish, black. We don't have show and tell today. Show and tell where your people came from. This child here, I tell you, where did you from? I'm Italian. My people came from Italy. Jew. I'm Jewish. I came from Israel. All of it in. Are you going to say it? I came from Israel. All right. Polish. My people are Polish. I came from Poland. Irish. My people are Ireland. I'm from Ireland. Black. I'm from Atlanta. I'm from Atlanta. I'm serious. I'm from Atlanta. That is. And we have people who are denying. See, the only reason we accept Africa as well as we do today is because that was the only positive thing came out of roots. After NBC said it was all right, then everybody became African. Yeah. Only after NBC. The day before NBC said that, nobody wanted to be. And we still haven't integrated that, what she was talking about emotionally. Intellectually, oh yes, Dr. Wright, we are from Africa. That's absolutely true, but you must admit, we also Americans. Yeah, like what the hell? Ain't no even, you don't even have to tell me that. But also, people, let me give you an example. We say African American. Let me tell you how you get trapped in that. Tell me everything you must tell. African American. Do you realize that blacks in Cuba are also African Americans? Do you know blacks in Brazil are also African Americans? See, if you really want to be precise, you're African United States. That's what it is. That's what it is. See, we must begin to be precise. But I'm an African American. I said, well, okay, then you're Cuban. What? What do you mean? Where did you get Cuban from? You know? Let me give you an example of training here. I'm going to call out four names. Charlene, you be quiet. I'm going to call out four names, and anyone who recognizes either one of these names, call up. One's name is Adam A. Collins. The other name is Denise McNair. One is Carol Robertson, and the other one is Cynthia Wesley. Who knows any one of those four names? Who knows those four names? Do you realize, one, two, three, mega name? You realize those are the four late sisters who were killed in Birmingham? Do you know those were the only four black women killed in the civil rights movement? Do you know that's why we are trained? We don't even know our heroes. So you got John F. Kennedy's picture up on your wall and not these four girls? Your children would never hear these four little girls who were dying there praying to God and got blown to bits? In Birmingham?
14 years old, one 11, the other three 14. See, if these were Jewish girls, they would still be taking up money for them. You see, but that's what I'm saying to you, see. That's mean names to you. But you, I bet many of you have heard of Anne Frank. You know, that courageous little Jewish girl who hid from the Nazis 4 years.
Should we make attendance at school activities intended to raise black consciousness mandatory for black students? What about students' rights?
Well, you also need to know. This gets back to our sanctions. Gwen knows it to be a truth. Gwen one time gave Gwen and I think our vote, all the pastors gave, and we came down, a lot of us came down by our own expense, and none of these schools were represented, Morehouse, Morris Brown, and all like that. And so I wrote all of the presidents of those schools. Gwen can attest to this. And one took the liberty of writing for all of them and, in fact, told me to mind my own business. I'm not surprised by that. What I am saying to you is, let me just tell you some other things that...
Dr. Bobby Wright.
You know, excuse me. I've had, like I said, I have people who have helped shape me, particularly in my development of consciousness over the many years, men and women who I was blessed to be in contact with, who helped give me a perspective of who I am as an African and began to instill in me the love of being an African, you know. And Bobby Wright was truly one that... along with Dr. Clark, and then there's many others, you know, as well as Conrad. And Conrad, once again, he writes for the Crusader newspaper group out of Chicago. And this is an article he wrote way back in 2017, revisiting the works of Dr. Bobby Wright. So many of the problems that African people face in the world today are due to the assault on our minds by those who captured us and removed significant numbers of us to the Western Hemisphere. This also included the mind damage caused by the tampering of Africans' lands and cultures on the continent of Africa. Most African people in America are aware that our minds were tampered with as a result of our forced capture and containment enslavement in America. The impact of this process is central to the international component of the reparations movement that we most focus on, and that is the repair of ourselves. The reparation movement is not just about some damn money. It is about the repair of ourselves. At the same time, we demand reparations from the government and private corporations who benefited from our captivity and still benefit today. Examining and re-examining the contributions of the late Dr. Bobby Wright provides a significant source that we can utilize in addressing our internal reparations challenges. The contributions of the late Dr. Bobby Wright in helping us assess the problem should be a continuous part of our study, reflection, as we struggle to break the psychological chains of European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. For years before Dr. Bobby Wright's untimely death on this day in 1982, he wrote a profound article entitled Menticide, the Ultimate Threat to the African Culture, to African People. In defining menticide, Dr. Wright explains that it is the deliberate, systematic destruction of a people or group's mind, which may give a clue to why African people, after developing such an advanced civilization, has for the last 400 years been assisting in its own destruction and nearly total subjugation of African by foreign invaders. Let me read that again. Menticide, the deliberate and systematic destruction of a people or group's mind, which may give a clue to why Africans, are, after developing such an advanced civilization, has for the last 400 years been assisting in its own destruction and the nearly total subjugation of Africa
by foreign invaders. In his early works, written in 1975, Dr. Bobby Wright, outstanding essay, The Psychopathic Racial Personality, if you don't have it, please get it. I don't give a damn how you get it. Even Amazon. If you got a bookstore, please get it. Psychopathic Racial Personality. He states that in the relationships of Caucasians to Africans, Caucasians exhibited a behavior of psychopaths, and their behavior reflects an underlying biologically transmitted precognitivity that is rooted deep in their evolutionary history. Menticide is the ultimate goal of the behavior. Another cursory examination of history will bear out and support the following incomparable traits of the Caucasian, the European, that Dr. Bobby Wright reveals in terms of, number one, their predatory behavior toward people and their land. Number two, the predilection for senseless destruction of nature and people. And number three, the ability to persuade Africans to support and protect them against their own interests. These key points described by Dr. Bobby Wright concerning the continued oppressive psychological condition of African people in the world indicates to me that our biggest challenge as a people is that of getting our minds straight and stopping menicide. Getting our minds straight requires that African people begin to relearn the African principle that renowned historian and ancestor, Dr. Anderson Thompson, Andy Thompson, good man, very good man, has been discussing for the last 20 plus years. According to Dr. Thompson, the African principle represents those standards, rules, laws, and customs which guide our behavior and which serve as a foundation for all of us and all our action. Dr. Thompson continues by explaining that African principle is the quality underlining source of the African value system, the gift from our creator passed down to us through our ancestors. The gift from the creator that passes down to us through our ancestors. At this juncture in history, we as African people have the capacity to straighten our minds out without the help of anyone outside of our community. It must be understood that Africa and African people have been under siege for more than 2,000 years by Europeans, Asians, and Arabs. The invasions, intrusions, thefts, murder, pillaging, and decimation and destruction of Africans' lands, bodies, minds, and spirits over the last 2,000 years is the basis for our own ongoing struggle for African liberation worldwide. In our efforts to straighten our minds out, the following revelation by Dr. Bobby Wright should be understood, internalized by all African people. Dr. Wright reveals that it is very clear that Europeans have developed a method whose basic purpose is to replace all indigenous cultures with their own. Therefore, Europeans, without any historical precedence, went forth into the civilized world and began to impose their culture on others, mainly through religion, literature modalities, and military force. All roads lead to our unity. We must work toward in organizing and mobilizing African people in America. All of our organizational strategies must lead to getting our minds right and stopping this menticidal attack. Without this occurring, we will continue in our present state of mental stagnation and servitude to other people. My good friend and brother, Conrad World, I'm revisiting Dr. Bobby Wright. When I first heard Dr. Bobby Wright, Psychopathic Racial Personality, I was just like, wow, stunned. I actually listened to that tape along with Dr. Clark consistently, religiously. I get in my car, I put that cassette in, and I would listen. Almost every time I was out somewhere, bam, no music, no news, no nothing, bam. I can listen to both of those men with their Alabama selves, the Southern draws. I mean, both of them.
Yeah. Like I said, those are highlights of my life, along with the birth of my daughters and birth of my grandsons and other things. But to me, that opportunity to hear Dr. Bobby Wright and the opportunity to sit at the feet, literally, to have lunch with Dr. John Henry Clark. The psychopathic racial personality. In a bullfight, after being brutalized while making innumerable charges at the movement. Excuse me, sorry. At the movement of a cape, understand something. The bullfighter is dressed in regalia, rhinestones, very, you know, all that tie, everything. He's just, and his cape is red. But the bull is colorblind. The red cape is for the benefit of the crowd. The benefit of the crowd. And I'm not sure if this is in there, but understand that bullfighting in Spain came after the Moors were kicked out of Spain and the Sephardic Jews were kicked out of Spain. If I make the argument that the bull represents us, and what is the objective of the bullfighter to do what? Kill the bull. In a bullfight, after brutalizing while making innumerable charges at the movement of a cape, there comes a time when the bull finally turns and faces his adversary, with the only movement being his heaving bloody sides. It is believed that for the first time, he really sees the matador. This final confrontation is known as the moment of truth. For the bull, this moment comes too late. The experience of African people all over the world presents analogous situation. For hundreds of years, Africans have been charging at the banners that are held by the European matadors. These banners have represented by the concepts such as democracy, capitalism, Marxism, religion, education. The banners remain constant as long as Africans were assets. However, with technology and worldwide industrialization on a rampage, resulting in further exploitation of Africa's resources, which in turn produces an increase in Africa's natural consciousness, Africans are now a threat and a liability to Caucasians. Therefore, the banner held by the matador represents only one concept: genocide. As a consequence, the major research by Caucasian scientists are involved in today is genocidal in nature. Nuclear warfare, population control, medication control, genetic engineering, psychosurgery, electrical stimulation of the brain, the highly complex science of behavioral technology. This is before AIDS. He wrote this in 1975. This is before AIDS became known to be what it is and the biological weapon that it was created to be for population control, to eliminate population. Yes, that's right. AIDS was created by Europeans in Fort Detrick, Maryland. They petitioned for it. They petitioned Congress for it. It's the moment of truth. It's time for Africans to look at the matador. It is time for us to look at the European. That's why when I went off earlier today in the beginning of the program, because we fail to look at the European for who and what they are. We keep having a feeling and a notion that somehow, stop it. This presentation is based upon the following very simple premise. Let me finish up what I was saying about the bullfighting. This represents when the bullfighting, fighting the bull, represents when Europeans kicked the Moors out of Spain. And so when you kill the bull and cut off the nuts, cut off the testicles of the bull, the tail and other, the ears, the souvenirs, just like they did when they hung us, just like they did when they hung us and all those lynchings that took place. This represent This presentation is based upon the following very simple premise. In their relationship with African people, Europeans are psychopaths, and their behavior reflects an underlying biological transmitted precognitivity with deep roots in their evolutionary history. The psychopath is an individual who is constantly in conflict with other persons or groups. He is unable to experience guilt, is completely selfish and callous, and has a total disregard for the rights of others. This premise is supported by overwhelming scientific evidence. Martin R. Delaney in 1980s, books in 86, Du Bois in 1996, Franz Fanon, Marcus Garvey, Welsing, Chancellor Williams, all of them who have wrote about the psychopath. There is a scientific dictum which states, everything that exists exists in some amount, and if it does exist, it can be measured. One of the best methods that can be used to measure the psychopathic traits of Caucasians is observing and analyzing their universal overt behaviors and attitudes towards Africans. However, in doing so, since Africans have been in captivity and colonized by Europeans, a very subtle psychological problem is posed, of which every African should be aware of. Intellectual insight about Caucasians does not ensure that there will be a corresponding change in Africans' behavior and attitudes toward Caucasians, particularly when there is a threat involved. For example, everywhere one finds Caucasians and us in close proximity to each other, whether it is in Chicago, Zimbabwe, Caucasians are in control. That is that way today. He wrote this in 1975. It's that way today. Yet rarely question this extraordinary universal phenomenon, which defies every known law of statistical probability. In fact, Africans denounce those who simply raise this question with admonition such as, we should not be racist and treat them as they have treated us. In fact, Caucasians are not going to allow us to treat them as they treated us. So this requires no discussion. Don't you sometimes think about what if this would have happened to them? How they would be? You're not even trained to think that way. However, the subject of African racism should be discussed. A fundamental definition of racism could be the oppression and exploitation of a people because of their race. Using this definition, it is very clear that at this point in time, Africans cannot be racist because of their lack of power to oppress anybody. Anybody can come in our community, come on a continent, anywhere, and do whatever the hell they want. I don't know about your community, but even here in Atlanta, we don't have one damn service station. Everybody is Indian or Iranian or whatever. Do you remember the hair care product? The Europeans said, we're going to control black folks' hair care products, American Africans' hair care products. Jesse got all mad. Push. They had a they proposed a funeral for Revlon, whoever made the comment. But look at today, the Koreans. The Koreans said, we're going to control hair care products in your community and do your nails. And so it's just like the Caucasian who said, we're going to try out this vaccine on Africans. But you know what happens? You should have just shut up and did it. Because that's usually what's going to happen. African intellectual enlightenment does not always lead to genuine insight, and it can be very damaging to the intellect, as reflected by the behavior and attitudes of many eminent African scientists. For example, Dr. Kenneth Clark in 1968 has spent his life making a fortune studying the victims of Caucasian oppression, his own people, and now speaks of the irrelevance of color. Dr. Alvin Poussant, who seems to be Johnson Publishing Company, Ebony Magazine, and Jet, which is no more, psychiatrist in residence, ignores the whole widespread genocidal programs dictated against Africans and writes such trivia as the difference between sex and love, blacks and Jews, an appeal for unity, and why blacks kill blacks. Blacks kill blacks because they have never been trained to kill whites. I repeat, blacks kill blacks because they have never been trained to kill whites. Therefore, it is outside of their experience. Historically, European system has encouraged the killing of Africans because Africans have been led to believe that they are part of the psychopath system. They simply follow the practice. Dr. James Comer is another American African psychiatrist whom the psychopaths have so overwhelmed that he is moved, as his book suggests, beyond black and white. Cobbs and Greer followed this tradition of Africans studying Africans themselves rather than their oppressor by concluding black rage, that Caucasians make Africans so mad that they kill themselves. That's why, to me, the book you should read once again is Urugu. Dr. Marimba Ani's great work, Urugu, an African-centered critique of European cultural thought and behavior. We kill each other because we've never been trained to kill Caucasians. African scientists generally rationalize their investigation as proof to Caucasian scientists that Africans can be scientifically objective. On the subject of objectivity in science, this author agrees with Dr. Jacob Carruthers, Baba Jetty, who, in his brilliant essay, Science on Oppression, states that science is not objective, nor is it neutral. An African scientist who moves outside the psychopath's approved course of study takes the chance of being labeled unscientific, emotional, biased, etc. Additionally, funds are only available to African scientists who support the approved course of study themselves. Many very competent African students who are naive about European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege in scientific inquiry are flunked out of schools because of their insistence on studying the ethnology of African problems, the psychopaths, rather than the effect. African students must be taught that Caucasian educational institutions are the matador's cape that protects them, whites, Caucasians, from African scientific inquiry, which would expose an unthinkable depth of psychopathology. In order to understand the psychopath's personality, one must differentiate between three classifications: the neurotic, the psychotic, and the psychopath. The definitions of psychopathology has been established and adhered to by the World Health Organization's International Classifications of the Diseases. The contributions of African people in determining these classifications are almost non-existent. Generally, the neurotic is a person who suffers a great deal over problems that are handled fairly routinely by well-adjusted personalities. The major problems for neurotics is their inordinate amount of anxiety. However, in contrast to psychopathic, the neurotic has very real, good, real reality contact. The psychotic, in addition to being out of touch with reality, has severe malfunctioning and many times has to be hospitalized for long periods of time. Now, this leaves the psychopath. Scientists agree that there is no science without classification. For the disciplines of psychology and medicine, it is not necessary for labels and diagnosis to have concrete reality. They can be retained if they are useful in understanding and treating disease. For example, the majority of patients who are admitted and committed to mental health hospitals in this country are diagnosed as being schizophrenic. Although there is no general agreement among psychiatrists and psychologists on the definition of schizophrenia. However, even though it is not required, this presentation does have a concrete reality, namely Europeans' behavior and attitudes towards Africans. Behavior scientists generally agree that the outstanding characteristics of the psychopathic personality are the almost complete absence of ethical or moral development and an almost total disregard for appropriate patterns of behavior. This characteristic has led to the misunderstanding of the psychopath as someone who does not know the difference between right and wrong. This belief is not true. Psychopaths simply ignore the concept of right and wrong. They know the difference. They just ignore it. They know it. This belief is not true. Psychopaths simply ignore the concept of right and wrong by ignoring this trait in the Caucasian race, ignoring this case ignoring this trait in Caucasians, the lack of ethical and moral development, Africans have made and are still making a tragic mistake in basing the worldwide liberation movement on moral suasion. It is pathological for Africans to keep attempting to use moral suasion on a people who have no morality, where culture is the variable. Because of their lack of ethical and moral development, there is no conflict between Caucasian religion and racial oppression. The Caucasian has historically oppressed, exploited, and killed African people, all in the name of their God, Jesus Christ, and with the sanction of their churches. It is generally overlooked that the Ku Klux Klan is primarily a religious organization. Further, Africans should never forget the image of the Pope blessing the Italian planes and pilots on their way to bombing Ethiopian men, women, and children who only had spears to defend themselves. This development is not surprising, since Caucasians use scripture to justify their treatment of Africans. According to the book of Genesis, Noah placed a curse on his son Ham, forever dooming all of his descendants to be servants in the service of God. Naturally, Caucasians interpret Africans as the descendants of Ham, and they themselves as the descendants of God. If one follows this interpretation, an interesting issue arises. If Ham was African, and Noah was his father, and Noah was African, and only allowed animals on the ark, since Caucasians deny that Africans and Caucasians sprang from the same source, a position that he agrees with, then we know from impeccable source how Caucasians got here, through animals. Unlike other extreme pathological syndromes, only a very small percentage of psychopaths are committed to mental hospitals, with another small amount or percentage ending up in penal institutions. The majority of psychopaths function very well in society. They are generally average or above average in intelligence, have an engaging personalities. In addition, they're usually very impressive and competent, with no feelings of insecurities, anxieties, or any other malfunctions or psychoneurosis. They appear to be very honest and human, but usually have no regard or concern or commitment except to their own selfish interests. Psychopaths will consistently make comments that they have no intentions of keeping, and show great indignation and anger when their integrity is questioned. Africans in the United States learned this lesson very well during the civil rights confrontation of the 60s, when Caucasian sheriffs and judges showed their greatest hostility when Africans began to quote the law to them. It's just like their fragility. Caucasian Dr. D'Angelo would have coined the first white fragility, saying that the Caucasians are fragile. They don't want to hear. They sure in the hell don't want to hear from us, because they don't want to hear from Caucasians. They believe, just like Franz Anon said, that they are superior. Their cognitive dissonance. This behavior can be seen clearly in Caucasians' attitude towards African liberation. Caucasian liberals give lip service to African liberation while arguing that Africans are going too fast. Caucasians conservatives think Africans have too much already. The psychopath is usually sexually inadequate, with a very limited capacity to form interpersonal relationships. The European sexual inadequacy psychologically explains the constant projection of Africans as super sexual beings and as lacking any sexual inhibitions. Yet it is Europeans who streak, mate swap, participate in orgies, etc. All of their sexual behavior is a desperate attempt to achieve meaningful relationships, which consistently, due to their psychopathic makeup, elude them. Caucasian sexual dysfunction has produced tragic consequences in our community. They have attempted to achieve sexual gratification by such methods as raping our women. Their rationale is that African women are oversexed and invited their attention. Historically, the justification for castrating our men was their animal passions had to be contained. In 1893, Frank Liston, a Caucasian doctor, proposed that castration would conserve the energy of the African community. The sustained sexual atrocities committed against African people by Caucasians have no parallel in history. There is no scientific explanation accepted under the rubrics of psychopathology. Psychopaths' inability to accept blame or learn from previous experiences can be easily proven. They never accept blame for African environmental conditions, which are clearly the result of Caucasian oppression. On the contrary, Africans are held responsible for the deterioration of the communities, even though all of the property is Caucasian controlled. In addition, municipal services are withdrawn from American African communities, and most of these communities have been used up before Africans are allowed to move in. In the fields of mental health and drug abuse, Caucasians are at their psychopathic best. The United States government polls position on drug users is that addicts are cured when they cease antisocial behavior, regardless of how long they have to be maintained on methadone or other drugs. Dr. Jerome Jaffrey and Edward Sine, the czars of the U.S. drug program at that time, were, with the assistance of protection of American African addicts and ex-addicts, have created one of the most destructive programs in our community, the Methadone Maintenance Program. The United States government is the largest supplier of drugs to addicts in the community. Sine takes the position that African addicts should not be given placebos or just orange juice. Just saying it here. You know what happened with crack, all of these things. This was written once again in 1975, and it's never abated. It's never stopped. They continue to do it. That's why I got a little frustrated this morning and said what I said, because this sugar honey iced tea continues to happen. If sexually frustrated suburban Caucasian housewives can be given sugar pills rather than real drugs, why can't American African addicts be given orange juice without the methadone, since they cannot tell the difference? Sine states that giving American African addicts pure orange juice without the methadone is unethical. Therefore, it can be deduced that doctors such as Sine believe that it is honorable to give African people drugs. Community mental health institutes are in such disarray that space does not permit an adequate discussion. They are underfunded and therefore understaffed, with the usual staffing pattern consisting of all Caucasian professionals and all low-paying non-professionals. Isn't that the same way today? That's what I'm saying, y'all. Additionally, almost every existing center uses the medical model, i.e. the belief that the major problem is the American African person himself, without any regard to his circumstances or environment. Furthermore, community centers and government agencies are heavily influenced by the American Medical Association, which one of the most overtly racist and probably the most powerful organization in the United States. A very vicious funding game is played with American African mental health centers, in which the United States government supplies funds, with the stipulation being that African community must find matching funds. Needless to say, there are usually no matching funds for American African mental health institutions and programs. Therefore, the federal funds revert back to the federal government. The psychopaths also reject constituted authority and discipline. The presence of this trait in Caucasians have gave grave implications to Africans who seek legal solutions to their problem. This especially applies to Africans in the United States, who are the world's only legally created group. That's right, created through the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendment, which can be repealed at any moment by Congress or declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. As long as this condition exists, African people in the United States will always be legally 5 minutes away from once again being enslaved. For Africans in the United States to place their destiny in the hands of Supreme Court justice is an extreme form of psychological blindness and pathological rejection of history. The United States Supreme Court has always used the prevailing Caucasian political climate as a criteria for dealing with questions of culture. For example, as a result of the infamous 1954 school desegregation decision, American Africans have lost an estimated 35,000 teaching administrative positions in the South. Former American African principals and school teachers are now janitors in integrated schools. And the same thing is going to happen with American African teachers in the North. Eventually, the Supreme Court is going to find the 54 decision unconstitutional, but by that time, Caucasians would have taken over all American African schools, including the colleges. That's what happened. Many of the colleges were state schools, like Tennessee State. The psychopathic behavior of Supreme Court justices is consistent with that of other Caucasian professionals, lawyers, doctors, judges, politicians, you name it. They consistently take advantage of American Africans without any guilt, any anxiety, or threat to their self-esteem. For example, in American African communities, Caucasian doctors are the largest dope pushers. They prescribe unneeded and dangerous drugs, perform unnecessary operations. Caucasian scientists use Africans in their destructive studies, such as the Tuskegee experiment, in which American African men were denied treatment for syphilis, and evidence suggests were deliberately infected. No evidence. No, it was a fact. The role that Caucasian scientists played in African oppression should not be surprising to Africans, because Caucasian has historically been the planners of African oppression. And has a rule, they never ask why, but only how. This behavior of Caucasian scholars, Jensen and Shockley, are classic examples of intelligence in the service of racist institutions or psychopathic behavior. Jensen and Shockley are simply following the psychopathic tradition of Hegel, Carlyle, Galton, etc., that they have continued for hundreds of years. History is replete with examples of Caucasian scientists trying to profess the inferiority of African people. The eminent Dr. Samuel Cartwright of Louisiana diagnosed Africans who ran away from captivity or their owners as having a disease of the mind. Remember that, diphtheria? Yeah. Dr. Robert Dean of Johns Hopkins University proposed that Africans had smaller brains than Caucasians, since brain efficiency depended upon the number of nerves and the number of positions of nerve cells and fibers in the brain. Africans had less capacity for development than Caucasian. Dr. Carl Jung, one of the Caucasian giants of psychology, stated that Caucasians, sexual inadequacy, their Caucasian sexual inadequacy was due to their living together with a barbaric race, with us. Their sexual inadequacy, the Caucasian use of science justification for racial oppression can be found even amongst the most adequate library. What makes Caucasian scientists as Shockley and Jensen so dangerous to the American African community today is that not only do they present so-called scientific proof of the threat, but they also offer solutions. With the present level of technology available to them, this should not be taken lightly. However, it is self-defeating and useless for African scientists to debate the question of race versus mass media with Caucasian scientists such as Shockley and Jensen. I know Francis Crest Wilden just dusted Shockley on Tony Brown's journal and on Phil Donahue. Caucasian scientists simply want exposed for their ideas. Additionally, it is pathological for Africans to discuss with Caucasians the question of whether or not we should exist. For all other people, simply raising a question about their existence is tantamount to a declaration of war. We are at war. We have been warred upon. This then is the psychopath's personality of the matador. The one constant is this ever-changing world is the behavior of Caucasians in their relationship with us. This is a very challenging problem. Inevitable question is, what should we do? One dilemma posed for us is the constant appeal for liberation through channels created for them by the psychopaths, namely democracy. Communism. A cursory examination of both systems immediately points out the futility of us giving them any more consideration. Africans must accept the reality that for Caucasians, democracy and racial oppression are not conflicting ideas. The fact that Africans have been enslaved for over almost 400 years by a democratic form of government should be evidence enough. Furthermore, a democratic government predisposes an inherent equality of cultures. It does not provide methods of liberation for those who are not equal. Communism can be dismissed as an alternative with even greater less discussion. For communism to be a viable requires the cooperation of the masses of Caucasian race, which of course would never happen. With that as a primary condition, communism needs no further discussion, nor socialism. However, since Africans have finally rejected democracy as an alternative by attempting to burn down its bastion, the United States, there are signs that it is now time for the Marxists to try to contain them. Throughout Africa, Marxists has enlisted African heads of state as allies. These African leaders go to great lengths to deny our struggle is racial. Yet, the only true independent nations on the African continent are those who are headed by white invaders. One of the greatest tragedies in the relationship between Africans and Arabs, for Africans to accept Arabs as anything but Caucasian invaders, is a pathological denial of reality. In the oil crisis, the Arab traders from the north treated Africans worse than they had treated some European nations. This behavior is consistent for a Caucasian psychopath. No Caucasian nation in the world encourages African immigration. I repeat, no Caucasian nation, European nation, encourages African immigration. But there is a great effort throughout the world to integrate Africa, to take it over. I told you, 100 million Chinese, the Chinese want to put into Africa. Again, the question of what to do. There is no evidence that Africans and Caucasians can live in close proximity to each other in peace without Caucasians attempting to oppress and exterminate Africans. In fact, there is overwhelming evidence that even Caucasian ethnic groups cannot live together. Irish and English, Greeks and Turks, Arabs and Jews. Behavioral scientists generally agree that there is no known cure for the psychopath. Behavioral scientists agree there is no known cure for the psychopath. In fact, it is widely held belief that the only successful treatment for the psychopath is incarceration, mass incarceration, radical psychotherapy, or death. Therefore, since Africans are at war with psychopaths, violence is the only way. Brother Lerone Bennett proposed in his brilliant essay, Time, Space, and Revolution, that it is hard to tell the time by revolutionary clocks. Likewise, it is difficult to tell the direction by a revolutionary compass. Unfamiliarity with the terrain and the instrument has disorientated Africans, and as a result is various inadequate and dangerous behavioral patterns. Some have become catatonic and they don't move at all, but wait for divine intervention, while others place their faith and energies in charismatic guides who are just as lost as they are. These Africans seem to ignore Brother Bennett's depressing, truthful warning that history does not forgive those who lose their way. Still others fantasize that Africans have reached their destination and attempt to accept accordingly as free men. Some persevere and pursue old beaten paths that inevitably lead back to the starting point. But there are those whose minds have moved past the psychopathic imposed person boundaries, and they have begun to blaze new paths toward Africans' rendezvous with destiny. So it was with Shaka Zulu in the 1700s, Jean-Jacques Dessalines in the 1800s, Martin R. Delaney in 1850, Henry McNeil Turner in 1880, Marcus Garvey in 1920, Malcolm X and H. Rat Brown in the 1960s, and Chancellor Williams in the 1970s. And that's right, Baba Mwalimu Burundi in the 2000s. The answer to Africans' problems can be found in the works and lives of those heroes. Marimba Ani, Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. They all looked at the matador, the psychopath, what he was, and they moved against him. Shimatilni Alabesica, we will win. The struggle must continue. We will conquer without a doubt. Bibi Fahodie, Bibi Fahodie, our victorious destiny. We have some callers. Let me take these calls. We still have some time. Oh, no. We're out of time. We'll take 15 minutes. We'll go over 15 minutes. Good afternoon. 334. 334. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie. Real quickly, man, you piled on a lot of information on me.
and I'm just absorbing it in. One of the points that I really like to make regarding Bobby E. Wright is quickly within Bobby E. Wright's lifespan, there was a gentleman that I think that we all become familiar with. And that gentleman, that brother, was Brother Nana Donnie Hathaway. Committed suicide within the lifespan of Bobby E. Wright.
Yes.
And using Donnie Hathaway as an example to see the kinds and types of trauma that he experienced that caused him to commit suicide would be a great example should you ever have a part two of this discussion.
Yeah, we'll do that.
One other point, too, as well. There was an African-centered model that was developed at Florida A&M University, where Naeem Akbar and others had created a program. Should you ever have a part two, I would love to hear their contributions and what we can learn from the Association of Black Psychologists and their works in trying to promote a program for the 21st century. Thank you so very much. Thank you, dear brother.
Thank you. And we need to work on that. Let's talk about that. We need to work on that. Thank you, my brother.
Very good.
Peace.
Peace.
All right. 646.
Yeah, what's going on, Oshi? How was your weekend, man?
Oh, it was good, man. It was good. I had a chance to, even though we were supposed to be in, I had a chance to talk to some young men and do my little history presentation on them, and it was good. So I felt good about that. Otherwise, I was in the house, man. and when I went out, I had a face mask on. Believe me. So
okay, well that's good. You know, it's a time when you can wear face masks and then you Google ain't trying to
I'm near the shoe.
You know what I mean? Even though some they still trying to capture. Really quick, because I know you're going off. Bobby Wright was a man who had a serious vision in regards to African people. And he wanted African people, as far as I'm concerned, to sustain ourselves, to see this white man for who and what he really is. Evil. Pure D evil. There's nothing in the world like this psychopath white man. And unfortunately, you got one of them leading the country right now.
Yeah.
Basically going to turn it into something that we could never have imagined. If this man opens up this country before June of this year, we're going to have a serious, serious pandemic. And, you know, people are going to have to figure out how they're going to survive, because this thing is real.
Yeah,
it's
no doubt.
No better.
No
it's
doubt.
No worse, because it's going from point A to point B to point C, and all this dirtbag is talking about jobs.
Yeah.
People got to get back to work. You know what that sounds like? When the slave master would beat us and make us get up the next morning to go pick cotton. And then if we didn't pick the right amount of cotton, we would be beat again.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just what this dog is, man. This is not a human. This is like a blatant animal, man. This is something it's just unreal, man. That's all I wanted to say. We just have to take the lessons of people like Bobby Wright and the rest, man, and use them as examples on how we are going to be able to survive, man. You know, a friend of mine, her uncle died from this. You know what I'm saying? There's other people that are becoming sick. And then you got these pork chop chicken-eating preachers, you know what I mean?
Talking about
they got to charge you $150 so you can come in. Take the test. You know, Jamal Bryan need his ass whipped.
I agree. Jamal Bryan, man.
You know what I mean? Men need to stand up and roll up on him like they did in Baltimore when he came around with his BS, and they need to put hands on him. For him to even do something like that to our people, charge them $150 because his tithes may be a little bit low. But then again, knowing most of those Negro peens that go to his church, they sitting in their ties.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the type of sickness that we in this community need to stand up and be men in the dress. He need his ass whipped. Because I'd smack him in his face if I ever saw him. and willingly do the time for it if I have to. He's an embarrassment. He's a disgrace.
Well, he's...
He don't be like the white man. Have they go out in front of his big church with no one in the church and preach that BS and do what you're supposed to do. Watch it on TV or go on the internet and watch it. This is unacceptable.
I say.
But hey, you know, my brother, be safe.
You too, Jay.
Before we take you on Wednesday.
All right, dude.
And hey, you got to do what you got to do.
That's right. You got to do what you got to do. But most of all, you got to protect yourself and be safe. Peace to you. All right.
Hotep.
All right. 7-7-4-4-7-7-4-4-7.
Oh, thank you, Bob Ochi. Listen, you know, whenever I think of Bobby Wright, I'm always reminded of two beautiful sisters who used to stand at a Sunday market and sell DVDs. And they introduced me through their work to so many of these people. I never knew, you know, until I started watching the DVDs, and I was just amazed by the information they were passing over. So it just goes to show, Baba Ochi, you know, no matter how small your contribution, it matters because it makes a difference.
That's right.
And trust me, this thing is moving. I mean, sometimes I used to go there, they used to have such a crowd around them, you know, mm-hmm. people used to be, you know, and, you know, I don't know where they were getting it because this was before the internet. So, you know, this thing, they can't stop. They cannot, no matter what they do, they can't stop. I said, but they will continue to try and do what they do because it's their nature, you know, and then mm-hmm. we just got to do what we do. We got to find our nature because they've changed our nature, you know. We were warriors when we were in Africa. That's what we were. We were warriors, yeah.
And that's what we got to be again.
We've become all kind of things.
That's
now.
What we got to be again, warriors. We must do everything in our power to change these dynamics. Change our mentality. Like I said, we are at war for the minds of our people. And that's a serious, serious challenge for us. Because, I mean, you know, a lot of things you can change. But to change the way you think and behave and how you look at yourself and each other and all of us is after you've been bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of you being inferior and your woman being ugly and your kids being unintelligent. And all these other things. It's a change. Yeah. So
psychological warfare. I want to say this last thing here.
Okay.
You know, every minute, because I learned on Time for Awakening, I heard this on Time for Awakening, you know, I was saying we were at war, just like you're saying, and many of us say we're at war. But there was a debate on Time for Awakening, and you had a not you personally, but I think it was Brother Eddie had a guest. And they said he changed that. He says that if we was at war, then we'd be fighting back, yeah? And when we look at the thing, a lot of us are like fifth columnists holding up the system. So we can safely say that we're under attack and we need to develop the strategies and the skills to fight back and then execute it. And I had to agree with that person. We're under severe attack, but we're not really developing the skills to really fight back. And I want to say this as well. You know, every minute we learn something new, and, you know, you get lots of information on the internet, but it's possible to do research. Now, what I've learned is this thing called a virus. You know, we've always accepted what we've been told because, you know, unless you study biochemistry or unless you study biowarfare, you don't really fully understand. You just accept what you're told.
Right.
But what I've been reading is that a virus isn't what we think it is. And I think people, you know, don't take it from me. People need to go on the internet and read what a virus is because there's a lot of misinformation we're spreading. Read what a virus really is, and then you're going to learn what's really going on. Because what's being spread is not a virus. What's being spread is a biological weapon devised by man to kill man. That's what's out here. And yes, it has a connection to 3G, because 3G works at 60 gigahertz, which is crazy. 2.5 gigahertz is what your microwave runs on, and nobody's going to stick their head in the microwave. And if you put your phone close enough to your head, you're going to get a headache. Because it's heating up the blood or the molecules internally. And that's what a microwave does. It heats it from inside.
Right.
So,
right.
So 60 gigahertz from 2.5 gigahertz, what these phones send out, right? I mean, you can go on the internet and see 2.5 gigahertz, yeah? Two phones heat up an egg, okay? You can see that. It's there. And then, now they're pushing out 60 gigahertz. So you can work it out for yourself. They want, I mean, it's crazy beyond, it's just crazy, but Ochi. You know, and why I wonder, and I really do wonder, we have, yeah, this country, and I know you have them in America, we've sent our children to universities, some of them come go to the best universities. They study these things. Where are they? Why aren't they speaking out? Why aren't they explaining what is going on? Why aren't they explaining about what a virus really is? I've got a good brain. I'm not a biochem, but I can read. Yeah, and we keep saying virus, but people need to go and read what is a virus, and then they're going to learn that it's not what you're being told on the being sold on a narrative. What they have created is a biological weapon. Okay, that's what they've created, and whether it's been put out there deliberately or unintentionally or whatever, however it's got out, it's out here. It's out here, and the 3G, there's a connection, and I can't put my finger exactly. But 3G, maybe, let's just say this, Brother Ochi, maybe this whole coronavirus, what this name that they've created, came from nowhere, and it's a hoax, just like the Twin Towers. Mm-hmm. And they've got us looking for a virus when really they're testing this thing and it's killing people. That, to me, is absolutely logical because I know it's very dangerous.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got to do our research. This time, you know, you can't go into war unless you have intelligence. And intelligence means information. Nobody, no government in this world is going to go and take on an opposition without having intelligence. And that means information. So
I agree. Listen, Paul, you know I got to go, man. I appreciate the information that you provide.
Thank you for giving me the time.
All of them provide, and I appreciate you guys listening. So, but I'll be back on Wednesday, my brother. Okay?
Keep up the good work.
Thank you. We end this program like we're in all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, thank you for listening. Have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bivivodie means our victorious destiny. We will be victorious. Bivivodie, family. Peace.